So welcome, everybody. This has been such a funny day of getting ready for class. The other day, Kobe said, "You need to tell more Sheikh Nasruddin stories in class." So I thought, okay, I'll find some Sheikh Nasruddin stories. And then Claude later told me about a little YouTube video clip of Pema Chodron that she wanted me to listen to, and there was a point in that she wanted me to speak to. So I said, okay. So then I thought I would, you know how in an acting class, like in an improv, you throw out ideas and the person has to just do the improv with whatever. So I thought, oh, all right, this will be, I'll just see what I can do with these rather disparate points. So then I listened to the Pema, and I didn't even understand what Claude even wanted me to talk about, so then I called her. So then I ended up giving her the whole Dharma talk spontaneously on the phone this morning, which I've now forgotten everything I said. And then Kobe's not here after I spent all this time looking for Sheikh Nasruddin's stories. So, and so it goes. And this is life, is it not? This is life. We think it's one thing, and then it's something else. It's a wondrous mystery, this life. After I got off the phone with Claude, I was so deeply satisfied having given this brilliant Dharma talk that I couldn't remember a word of. I had to go to the vet to pick up more medicine for poor Baji. So I thought, well, let me plug Pema in. I'm listening to Pema in my car. So I listened to it over and over and over again. It's only a 6-minute clip. And at a certain point, I was so sick of it. I was so sick of Buddhism, you know, and I was just so sick of it. And I just wanted the luscious, nectarian, blissed out, exotic wonder, magic, color, and life, and ecstasy. And I don't know how you can talk about embrace and be so bloody contracted. I love Pema Chodron, don't get me wrong, but oh my God. So I thought, I need Baba Muktananda. So now, you know, the Sutta Foundation is so messed up that they've like copyrighted everything. So no one can really, there's nothing about Muktananda on YouTube. I mean, everyone else. I mean, not me, because I haven't ever gotten around to posting anything, but I think everyone posts millions of things on YouTube. Anything you want is on YouTube. There's like 4 videos of Muktananda. None of Muktananda giving any Dharma talks, unfortunately. But there are these rather cheesy, I mean, uber cheesy little videos that were made as sort of promotional kind of thingamajigs back in the early days, like in the 70s. But, and listen, we know the shadow of Muktananda and all the bad stuff that happened, but if Pema can go on and on about her wondrous teacher who was a drunk, whose chosen successor was HIV positive and he gave AIDS to different people, I mean, if she can go on and on about Trungpa, I can cavil a little bit about Muktananda. And it was wonderful to see him. If you've not seen Muktananda in action, I encourage you to check him out on YouTube and look at the one, I think it's 19, it's like the first world tour or something. You know, what can I say? It was so nice to hear his voice again. You know, so many years I sat in that hall, drenched in the nectar of his Shakti. And although, you know, I later came to question being drenched in the nectar of another Shakti, and, you know, I later came to question the paradigm of Guru Yoga in that we so give ourselves over to another, still, you know, there are amazing teachers, you know, there are amazing beings. And to be in the presence of another one who's so unique and interesting and just juicy was just lovely. So after having a little bit of darshan with Baba in the car, while I was getting gas in my car, it was one of those kind of days, you know, just all over the place. I forgot everything I wanted to talk about tonight. what Claude and I were talking about on the phone this morning, you know, it's just, it's all here. We go looking everywhere, thinking we're going to find it somewhere outside of ourselves. It's never going to happen. It's not where it is. We know this, we hear it over and over and over and over again. We don't even know what that means, almost, because we're so conditioned to be drawn out of ourselves by the action of the senses and the amazing pull of this material world. I mean, we know the planet's a mess right now, but it's wonderful anyway. Someone sent me a photo of the most beautiful sunrise, I think, over maybe the Rocky Mountains, and oh my God, it was just like, what's that E. Cummings poem, I think, what is, oh sweet spontaneous earth, what is this? It's a spring, I think it's E. Cummings, I have to dig it up. It's so majestic, it's so incredible. And how could we not be pulled out of ourselves and just want to be in this glorious beauty that surrounds us? Even in central New Jersey, you know, there is beauty. I being on Route 1 is always a bit of a disconnect for me. But then I get out, you know, in the trees, and it's lovely, and it's lovely. The stars and the moon was so beautiful last night. But of course, that's all inside of us as well, you know, and that's the thing we forget. It's all inside. So back in another lifetime, a few days ago, before I got requests for what I should talk about tonight, I was thinking a lot about the concept we've spoken of so many times over the years about this container and developing this container, fostering this container, feeding this container, refining this container so that it can hold us bigger and bigger and deeper as we continue plunging deeper and deeper into the amazing stuff that lives inside of us. And even though Kobe's not here tonight, I guess I'll tell you these Nasruddin stories, and maybe we'll tell them again in a couple weeks if she comes. There's a lot of Nasruddin stories I don't really get. I just think they're, I don't know what such a fuss is made about them, but some of them are, on the other hand, are spectacular. And these two are pretty fun. So there's one, you've probably heard it before, I've probably told it before, where Nasruddin and his friend are outside at night. There's a full moon, and they're outside because Nasruddin lost his keys, and he's trying to find his keys, and he's enlisted the help of his friend to find his keys. So they're looking and looking and looking for the keys, you know, in the light of the full moon, can't find the house keys anywhere. The friend finally says to him, Nasruddin, I don't know where your keys are. They're not here. We've looked everywhere. And Nasruddin says, no, I know. I lost them in my house. So the friend says to him, why are we looking out here? And he says, this is where the light is. And this is how we are, you know. We're always looking in the light. But it's easy to find it in the light. Where it really is in the darkness. Where it really is in the hidden places. And that's where we have to go to. But we have all this stuff around going into the dark. What's a great line? What is it? Children are, well, no, actually, this is going to contradict what I'm saying, but I'll give it to you anyway. Children are afraid of the darkness, but adults are afraid of the light. That's true also. But never mind, that's a contradiction. So we'll just delete that and contemplate that another time. But you know, the fertile darkness, that's where it's all happening. And actually that light that we're so afraid of course, is sitting inside that fertile darkness. Because once we really enter into the spaciousness inside of ourselves and just keep penetrating that deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, that's what it's all about. You know, we have so many notions of what enlightenment is, or what mastery is, or what fearlessness is, and it isn't really anything. That's the thing. It's not anything. It's like we're it all the time. We just have to get out of our way. We just have to get out of our own way. You know, Claudia and I were talking this morning. It's just, it's a very subtle shift in identification. So the other Nasruddin story, Nasruddin is living out on the desert, and there's no water. So he prays to the Lord, and God says, dig a well. So over the course of the next 40 years, Nasruddin digs 50 wells, and he never finds water. And then he dies, you know, and the angel of the Lord comes to take him wherever he's going to go. And Nasruddin says, you know, I don't get it. Like, I pray to God, give me water. God said, dig a well. I dug 50 wells, and I never got water. So the angel says, how deep did you dig? So he says, I dug 50 wells, each one 50 feet deep. And the angel said, oh, you only had to dig one 100 feet, and you would have hit water. And that too, you know, that's the story of our lives. We're always running here, there, and everywhere. You know, we get so caught up in thinking, this is going to give it to me, that's going to give it to me, this will give it to me, this teacher, that therapist, this system, that book, this CD, this YouTube video, whatever it is. And they can all give us a little something. But where we really need to go is inside. It's like all the wisdom, everything, all the insight, it's all inside. We were laughing about this morning. Can I tell them? Claude found an old journal. It's like, for how many years ago? It's like 8 years ago. 8 years ago. And she was laughing because the insight was every bit as luminous and true as what she knows today, 8 years later. Because the insight is always the same. It never changes. You know, and here I am now, we don't even want to mention my age, but we know how old I am, and I look at journals now from a lot of years ago, and when I was on, I knew what I know today, no difference, same thing. And as I'm opening back into more of my creative life, and I'm remembering poems and songs that I wrote 40 plus years ago. And they're still as alive as they were then, you know? I was tuned into something back then as a young woman, and now I'm more of a crotchety old crone, but, you know, it's the same insight that I tune into. It's the same truth. It's always here. Call it the witness, whatever we call it. We call it the self or the capital S. It doesn't matter what we call it. It's a presence. It's that presence inside of us. And it sits in the fertile darkness. And it radiates light. And our job is to keep moving into that light. You know, Pema talks, she talks wonderfully about, and you know, we were saying we love her language. We love the language. What's the word? A genuine is so much nicer than authenticity. It's a wonderful word to be genuine. I'm so sick of authenticity. Now I'll never say it again. Now I can borrow her word genuine. It's so lovely. And that is the tantric way, you know, that's what we've been about here forever. It's about embracing whatever is arising, no matter how it makes us feel. And then loving ourselves enough to fearlessly open into whatever is arising. You know, we're so conditioned to push it away. We're so under the influence of that fight or flight, that very primitive reflex. And that is the antithesis of what we need to do on a path of mastery. Because that will always make us run, right? Abba could give us a Dharma talk on the brain, right? And stress. And that's where meditation and chanting are so beneficial. Because meditation and chanting create so much more space upstairs and upstairs, inside, and upstairs. I was thinking about neural pathways, right? It makes those neural pathways open right up into the frontal lobes, yeah? So we don't get stuck in that old brain, yeah. You know, meditation and chanting teach us how to sit still, even when we're fidgeting. Right? Teach us how to witness the mind. Teach us slowly, over years of practice, how to not get caught up in the thoughts. And what I do want to do tonight when we get round to meditation is I'm going to give you a guided meditation tonight that I'm probably going to talk the whole time. Because I really want to work with this notion of containing and not allowing thoughts to pull us out of ourselves. been very, very conscious of my own leakage points the last few days. I actually was out last night and drank a glass of wine with dinner, which I just kind of lost it. I'm not... Anyway, whatever. And I mean, for me, I mean, losing it, it was nothing. But I leaked. I said something to someone that I was very sorry. It was a very nice thing that I said. But I still, later when I thought about it, I thought it was a leak. Should have just kept my big mouth shut. And, you know, it's so easy to leak. It's so easy to leak. And I have really devoted many, many years of my sadhana to sealing up all those leak points. And yet, it's so easy to have a bit of a lapse when one is out with friends having a lovely dinner, a glass of wine. So this experience I had last night makes me even more, motivated to focus here for a while on this thing of containing, 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 pulling in whatever projection we're sending out. You know, anytime we have a leak, anytime we say something inappropriate or invasive or just whatever, unnecessary, anytime we break the dharma of speech, you know, what's that coming from? It's coming from some kind of impulse inside of us that is not genuine, right? Some kind of dissociative state, wanting to, you know, to have somebody like us, although the antithesis will happen, wanting to have a certain kind of, persona, you know, all the things that we do that are actually pushing away from what we truly are. And so the work is akin to continue to be very conscious, to keep waking up and to keep pulling all of that projective universe, all of the, you know, the nonstop narrative that we're constantly projecting onto the world, and pulling all of that back inside. And meditation practice is such a great arena to work with that, because we're just sitting, you know, and you're stuck with your own mind. And better, whenever there's a thought, to just lasso those thoughts back in and come back down into the breath. So I will give a rather, some may experience it as a rather obnoxious dharma tonight, because I'll talk the whole time. But if you're in a deep place, hopefully you'll tune me out. So I want to read you a couple of poems. I'm going to read Kabir. I said to the wanting creature inside me, "What is this river you want to cross?" I said to the wanting creature inside me, right? We know what that is, right? That's the ego grasping for answers outside. I said to the wanting creature inside me, "What is this river you want to cross?" There are no travelers on the river road, and no road. Do you see anyone moving about on that bank or resting? There is no river at all, and no boat, and no boatman. There is no tow rope either, and no one to pull it. There is no ground, no sky, no time, no bank, no ford. And there is no body and no mind. Do you believe there is some place that will make the soul less thirsty? In that great absence, you will find nothing. This is a very Vedantic poem. Be strong then and enter into your own body until now, when it becomes 100% tantra. Be strong then and enter into your own body. There you have a solid place for your feet. Think about it carefully. Don't go off somewhere else. Kabir says this, just throw away all thoughts of imaginary things and stand firm in that which you are. Yeah? It's a great poem. And then David White, writing about the very same notion, a few hundred years later, sitting Zen. After 3 days of sitting hard by the window, following grief through the breath like a hunter who has tracked for days the blood spots of his injured prey, I came to the lake where the deer had run exhausted, refusing to save its life in the dark water. And there it fell to ground in our mutual and respectful quiet, pierced by the pale diamond edge of the breath's listening presence. I'll give you that again. After 3 days of sitting hard by the window, following grief through the breath, like a hunter who has tracked for days the blood spots of his injured prey, I came to the lake where the deer had run exhausted, refusing to save its life in the dark water, and there it fell to ground in our mutual and respectful quiet. And there it fell to ground in our mutual and respectful quiet, pierced by the pale diamond edge of the breath's listening presence. It's a very, very profound evocation of that process of, I mean, he was probably sitting, well, 3 days, he was probably sitting sesshin, and 3 days is really, really starting to get into it. And they sit hours every day. You know, and chasing, well, following grief through that breath, and also all the thought, you know, all the myriad universes that one encounters when one is sitting 12, 15 hours a day. Like a hunter who has tracked for days the blood spots of his injured prey. And isn't that like what our thoughts are? I came to the lake where the deer had run exhausted. Came finally to that place of stillness, refusing to save its life in the dark water. Isn't that like the mind? Even at the water, it refuses to jump in. And finally, there it fell to ground in our mutual and respectful quiet, pierced by the pale diamond edge of the breath's listening presence.